The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good yawning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Thursday, the 9th of January, 2025, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. Today is the eve of the newest public holiday in the Bahamas, Majority Rule Day, celebrated on the 10th of January every year. The first Majority Rule Day public holiday was commemorated or celebrated in, or enjoyed for most people, in 2014. January 10th, 1967, to be sure, was neither an end nor even a beginning. Instead, it was an important milestone in a journey that was begun centuries ago when some anonymous enslaved person struck a blow for freedom for the first time. We pause to pay homage to the personalities and players in this epic struggle. In a hard-fought and competitive election in 1967, the PLP delivered the following 18 members to a 38-member House of Assembly. They were Lyndon Pinling Preston, Clifford Darling, Elwood Donaldson, Arthur Folks, Carlton Francis, Arthur Hanna, Warren Lavarity, Curtis McMillan, Uriah McPhee, Maurice Moore, Edmund Moxey, Jimmy Shepherd, George Thompson, Jeffrey Thompson, and Cecil Wallace Whitfield. Randall Fox, who successfully ran as Labour in 1962 and 1967 with the support of the PLP through his support by the PLP and became a member of the first Majority Rule Cabinet. He figured prominently in the movement toward majority rule. Successful independent candidate Sir Alvin Brainin threw in his lot with the PLP and accepted the post of Speaker of the House. These two warriors for justice and freedom tipped the proverbial scale in favor of the PLP, and the first majority rule cabinet was formed. Majority Rule Day became a public holiday in 2014. It commemorates the Bahamas gaining majority rule for the first time on January 10th, 1967, symbolizing the promise of equality, a level playing field, and fair play for all Bahamians. I think Majority Rule Day is an important day. I question if it is more important than independence, right? I don't think we talk enough about Majority Rule Day. It appears it has turned into a party achievement, a national achievement. One thing, though, is certain, is that people are allowed to connect or intersect or, you know, engage Majority Rule Day from their perspective as well as the collective. And so it's important for us to write down our stories to better understand what Majority Rule Day and what Majority Rule means to Bahamians, then we need Bahamians to tell us that, right? And most importantly, it's dangerous to allow a political narrative to be documented as the only history that exists. The story will be told the same way until we begin to tell it differently. So I invite people who disagree with the modern reconciliation with Majority Rule Day to begin to document their own stories. And guess what? Every story has value. Every story is important because it takes every story to tell the truth. And let's not be afraid of the prevailing political narrative. If you're predominantly European descent, then your reconciling of Majority rule is equally important to the stories of Africans in the Bahamas experiencing majority rule. Let us be bold and tell our stories. Let us document them. So in the future, if they are left out, we could say, no, no, no. Don't invisibilize us. Don't ignore us. We are also a part of the whole. Because what we'll find is that many people, or let me rephrase that, people can experience oppression and perpetuate oppression at the same time. Right? This is how life works. And so we have to introspection, examine ourselves, the space we take up in the world, in our communities, in our homes, in collective life in the Bahamas, be cognizant and aware of it ourselves, so we can always understand our location in the whole and the collective. This morning, I was hoping to pull my two sports guys together on a non-sports day, and I'm hoping that they can still make it because we are at the beginning of the playoffs for the NFL, and it's been an exciting season. I want to get into that. But also, I was hoping, and I'm still hoping, against Mitchell may be able to make it in today, because I wanted to ask him a singular question. To what extent was sports a part of the national identity preceding and immediately after majority rule was achieved? Right? And this question is sparked me by the campaign to have Elijah Obed recognized and memorialized, right, as one of the first Bahamian athletes on the world stage. And listening to conversations with people and talking to people who were alive when Obed was beaten the ring bad, you get a sense of how important his achievement was to the collective. So I'm hoping Mr. Mitchell can join me this morning. I'm a little bit out of sorts this morning because I was focused on this event that's taking place tomorrow. The Division of Cultural Affairs is hosting its annual Culture at the Majority Rule Day holiday, Friday, January the 10th, 2025, at Arawaki from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. From 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. is the All Bahamian Book Fair. Almost there. From 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. is the Children's Native Show featuring LeBron and the accordionists and the Prince Albert drummers and a number of other vibrant and exciting acts. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. is the Bahamian Folktale Costume Competition, an indigenous Junkanoo competition where costumes are to be made the old style way from what is available around you. Straw and newspaper and cardboard and seeds and shells and leaves, like sea grape leaves, thing like that. Anyway, here's the most exciting part. First prize, $5,000. Second prize, $2,500. You hear that? For each competition, Bahamian Folktale Costume Competition and Indigenous Junkanoo Competition, $5,000 first prize for each, $2,500 second prize. All the prizes, because I aim in for first prize. And if you see me today, I'm halfway to my costume, bullfrog dress up in soldier clothes, gone to the river to shoot some crows. Again, 12 p.m. to 5 p.m., All Bahamian Book Fair, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., Children's Native Show, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., Bahamian Folktale Costume Competition and Indigenous Junkanoo Costume Competition, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Bahamian Flicks. Again, cash prizes for the costume competitions and trivia. All right, I want to give my guests just a little bit more time before I delve into some sports. I have somebody join me in studio just now, and I want to talk headlines until I get to the sports. We give it about 15 minutes of some headlines. There were lots of stories in the paper yesterday that I wanted to touch on, but the majority rule conversation was so juicy that we decided to maintain it. Again, this is how you show value and you show younger generations value. You focus on the conversations that are important, and having collective national conversations about majority rule day are still important. So here we go. Here's a headline from yesterday's papers that I wanted to touch on. Abaco storm shelter misses finish deadline. 6 months after officials from the Disaster Risk Management Authority said Abaco's long-awaited hurricane shelter would be completed by the end of last year, residents say the facility remains unfinished. A video shared with the Tribune yesterday showed the shelter in Central Pines, Abaco, still under construction. The structure was covered with scaffolding at the front, while some areas appeared plastered. The building remained unpainted. The roof lacked shingles, though an ice and water shield had been applied. Several doors and windows had been installed. Roscoe Thompson, chairman of the Marsh Harbor Spring City Township, criticized the government for the slow progress. He noted the project has been ongoing for 5 years, having been reviewed and delayed by successive administrations. They call that stop, review, cancel. Maybe we didn't reach the cancel part yet. Quote, there is no excuse for this PLP administration and the DRA in justifying why it is not finished yet, close quotes, Mr. Thompson said. Mr. Thompson also argued that the government has not prioritized adequate funding for the shelter, which is expected to cost $4.5 million. He suggested that funds spent on consultants in various ministries could have been better allocated to critical projects like this one. A Dundas Town resident said that from the outside, the shelter seemed to be making some progress. However, they were unable to confirm if work on the interior, designed to accommodate 200 people during a hurricane, had advanced. The resident emphasized the importance of the shelter, noting that access to an operational facility would greatly benefit the island aftermath of Hurricane Dorian's devastation in 2019. Again, the resident emphasized the importance of the shelter, noting that access to an operational facility would greatly benefit the island, especially in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian's devastation in 2019. I just want to note how polite that resident was, how well they crafted their words. Another resident described the delays as a, quote, slap in the face, close quotes, highlighting ongoing trauma from Hurricane Dorian and the fear of remaining on the island during storms. Last year, some residents expressed skepticism when DRM Authority Managing Director Aaron Sargent announced during an Office of the Prime Minister press briefing that the shelter would be completed by the end of 2024. Mr. Sargent publicly rejected their skepticism, saying, quote, there's a commitment to ensure that the shelter is completed before the end of the year, close quotes. See, here's the thing here. You could be very sure about the commitment. You could be very sure about your personal commitment. But that doesn't answer the question. You haven't actually responded to the concerns of the residents. And the concerns now are, how is it that everybody could be so committed to the completion of the project has faced setbacks. In September, trusses on the shelter collapsed as Abaco marked the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Dorian. Again, in September, trusses collapsed as Abaco marked the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Dorian. Photos of the incident went viral. In December 2020, the Minnis administration broke ground on the Abaco Hurricane Shelter and Community Center. Initially designed to accommodate 800 people, the project was expected to cost $1.8 million and be completed by May 2021. However, that deadline was missed and the Minnis administration was voted out of office shortly after. DRM officials did not respond to the Tribune's questions up to press time. End of story. I want to hit this point again. The shelter is expected to cost $4.5 million and be able to accommodate 200 people. At the beginning of the project, the shelter was earmarked at $1.8 million, expected to be completed by May 2021, and intended to shelter 800 people. So how has the cost quadrupled, but the amount of people that it's supposed to shelter decreased, divided by four, but the cost multiplied by four? See, if I call it PLP math, then y'all say I'm being unreasonable and being disrespectful. But this, my friends, is a perfect example of PLP math. It is a... I think it's important to read that story in New Providence to understand what it feels like and how it is that people could feel like they're living in an apartheid state in a country that is celebrating the end of apartheid. Dorian was the most devastating weather event in this hemisphere, hurricane event in this hemisphere outside of the Haiti, is it 2010? The Haiti 2010 earthquake. And we think that the residents of Abaco should suffice with, well, we committed to the project. We haven't met any of our timelines. We haven't met any of our economic markers. But you could trust that we are committed. But irony is that the trust collapsed a long time. And something, somebody must take the lives and the lived experiences of family islanders seriously. They feel like they've been disregarded because they have. I left Andrus in 2003, a job in Andrus in 2006, internet lines for the whole of North Andrus. In 2003. And although there appears to be progress on the surface, what it's like the commensurate developmental lags and dysfunction track the progress. It doesn't matter how much you improve what's available, like the off what types of things are available. The infrastructure renders service providers unable to deliver the service that they promise. Anyway, family islanders, if you want to call in and express any concerns or discontent or even gratitude and gratefulness as we approach majority rule day, the number for family islanders to call toll-free is 242-300-5720. For us New Providence people, you could call 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Let's go to The Guardian. Mr. Newry, did you watch the National Address last night?
Snippets of the National Address last night.
Did he address the things that you thought he was going to address?
No, not in detail, but I'm going to say it. Okay, let me start off with this. I appreciate the Prime Minister having in consideration the cost of living. Mm-hmm. That he appreciates that it's too high. That it is high. Not that it's too high, but it is high. And that he made some effort or is making effort to address that. I appreciate the consciousness of it. I appreciate the effort of decreasing the VAT by 50%, moving it from 10% to 5%.
On food items, non-prepared food items in the food store.
I went to do the math on that, mm-hmm. right, to see how much I can save, right? And I went to buy eggs today. Eggs are $7.89 before VAT. I can't afford the $7.89. Then on top of that, the VAT comes up to like $8.28-$8.30 or whatever it is. So I'm assuming that with the 50% discount, mm-hmm. it'll come to $8.09, right? But I can't afford the $7 for the egg. Mm-hmm. So the gesture the prime minister is doing, even though I appreciate it, I still can't afford groceries, right? The common man on the street are struggling because the groceries are too high. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to lobby to have duties be reduced on certain imported items.
As well.
That I can feel it in my pocket so I can survive. So I remember our prime minister saying that cost of living is a choice. Mm-hmm. Right? And despite it's being a choice, I see that he still made a gesture of reducing VAT. But when I try to make a choice just to buy eggs, and I have to make a choice, I have to buy chicken wings rather than chicken back, and I have to, or I have decided not to get no chicken at all. Mm-hmm. Or when you're realizing that corned beef and tuna is so expensive that I can't afford, and I say, what is it that I can afford? Yeah. And I realize, I say, man, it's better to go on Wolf Road. That's Wolf Road. What our bishop name on Wolf Road there?
The great Bishop Walter Hanschel at Great Commission.
And tell him I only have $60 and they're seeing for that. They're seeing for food. This $60 to pay
for
rent.
For bills.
For bills. And you need to feed me for the rest of my life until I catch up. This is where people are at when they said, man, it's easier to join Bread Langs and get a plate of food than to go to the food store.
I don't think people understand the term the working poor.
The working poor.
Right, because if you're working, then you can't be poor.
Yes.
But the truth is that the vast majority of people are the working poor.
Or too many people are the working poor, who even if it's a vast or minimum.
No, I mean, think about this. The recent research project, what does it mean to be middle class in the Bahamas?
Yes.
People are fighting the research.
Yes.
Saying that can't be true. No. But the truth is you're the working poor in your category because you imagine yourself to be middle class. If you are middle class, then you are the working poor. Because even working your hardest, you cannot economic, right? The minimum level to hit that category. If you're working and you can't just pull up to doctor's hospital mm-hmm. for care, you're the working poor.
Yes. And few people can pull up to doctor's hospital and say, see my card, or pull up to the doctor's hospital and say, see this cash?
Yeah.
I need to be served. They would have to go and ask A&E at PMH and wait.
Yeah.
Wait 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours to be served, to be seen, to go through the triage, and then wait.
Another question I asked, just because we're using the specific example of eggs, right? I question, what has happened to the Golden Yolk program? We should be able to, at this point in time with eggs over $7, to benefit from a program that was aimed to ensure that eggs were available at a reasonable price, accessible price, in the event that internationally, externally, egg prices rise or there is a global poultry crisis.
Man, remember, this is what the Golden Yolk program was initiated for.
This
they,
is where
they realize that there are outside shocks that will cost Bahamians and the Golden Yolk program. Mm-hmm. Something happened. Aaron, and they didn't tell us what happened.
Right.
And we found that we have to buy new chickens. We had to buy new chickens and then start the program.
How you find out we had to buy new chickens?
Rumors. My inbox tell me
that. Yeah, okay.
So they may have no chickens. The chickens got, when they say no chickens, I talk about all of the chickens disappeared.
What do you mean disappeared?
Like, I don't know.
Did they die because of a virus or somebody stole them?
No
or
explanation.
Did they figure out what was happening, that they were not on a vacation in the premier destination in the Caribbean, but were in fact in a work program to be slaughtered at the, and then they flew away?
No explanation. And see, I have no problem with that now, but it shows that we are not deserving of an explanation. Right? I am concerned about it because apparently we had eggs already in the system. We had the chicken already in the system. We were buying more eggs and more feed and whatever it is, and it was working at a minimal level. Then it stopped altogether.
Mm-hmm.
It collapsed altogether from working minimally to collapse altogether to starting all over. But nobody came to us to say, well, we have issues.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And whatever the issues is, this is the issue, so this is how we're addressing the issues. Nobody came to us to say, this was the problem, this is how we're going to address it. And unfortunately, if there's another egg shortage, we won't be able to assist.
Accommodate. Yeah.
Yes.
Another concern for me was, and producer, let's go to the phone line, let's take these two calls, and we're going to go to a break. Another concern for me is always this in a tourism centered market. Are eggs being produced, but hotels and larger businesses are being prioritized?
I mean, locally or?
Yeah, locally.
Well, no eggs are being produced because basically it's a collapse. You get no eggs.
All right.
Now,
because if somebody.
Let's talk about the importation of eggs. Now, if there's an egg shortage that we know of in the United States, right? One would assume that when either the food stores, And the hotels have to purchase it. And if they purchase it from the whatever that big company is on Gladstone Road.
Yeah, the one that is controls 60% of food distribution in the Western Hemisphere.
The host does them claiming all eggs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Then the price got to go up. There's an egg shortage. So is an egg shortage in the United States? Then the supply and demand comes on.
Now, the price doesn't have to go up.
But I have no eggs.
But you sell what you have at the price. At the price, and then we just wait for more eggs to come.
If the hotel has all the legs, and then these food stores need to, whatever they was left, they need to go up in the price because of supply and demand.
Oh, that thing called capitalism that ignores the lived experiences of Bahamians.
Or if they keep it at the right price, they have no eggs.
And only focuses on the lived experiences of wallets. I understand that. Let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, good morning to you, Aaron and Nuri.
Morning to
Seattle
you.
Seattle Johnson.
Yes, sir.
The good point that Nuri made is the fact that, yes, saving 5% may be great on VAT, but what do you do when the goods and you want to buy is out of your reach anyway? So it becomes an illusionary benefit.
Mm-hmm.
The Prime Minister could have well said that all Rolls-Royce will be duty-free. The point, though, is that we have to consider that the Prime Minister didn't put any emphasis on growing the economy or the personal economy of individuals that put these things within reach.
Mm-hmm.
Eggs is considered a primary staple of the of what they call our vulnerable populations within countries for essential nutrients and production of certain goods and services, be it bread and other different things. And so the fact is that when we were announced that the chicks had reached the Bahamas, around 18 weeks is when they begin to lay eggs. And they peak at about 30 weeks after that. And generally, you know, depends on the chick you have, you retire them in 6 or 7 years. And they can live for several more years if they don't become fried chicken or souse or something or something else. And so I think the government owes us an explanation, considering the millions of dollars that they invested in the egg program, and proportionally, what is the production, what's the holdup, what everything else. But I think one of the most important things that we have to realize is that at the same time, we're talking about food stores and other stores reducing, not collecting 5% on VAT. Their prices are going up because of the cost of energy, the cost of transport, the cost of labor, productivity, and other different things. So the question then becomes, is it really realistic? They should provide CNS the data to support their position. Is it realistic that we could expect the 5% to have an impact? So let's say I go for bread that last year was $5, is now almost $7. Okay, you take the 5% off. I could have barely afforded it at $5. How could I afford it at $7 to even see the 5% VAT savings? Mm-hmm. So, you know, illusionary benefits. And I think we need more concrete economic development, more so personal economy development for Bahamians to basically buy into any type of real change we have.
Thank you very much, C. Allen. I really appreciate that assessment of this fiscal policy decision announced last night. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How you do?
Okay, sound like we are going to need a commission inquiry into the chicken thing.
In the Golden Yolk program? Yeah?
That's right. Yep. Anyway, just as an aside, mm-hmm. being a person who's on the ground a lot, mm-hmm. over the past year, it seems like chicken in the bag has been making a comeback. Now, you could take that anybody you want to take that, but that's just what all bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. I needed that laugh today. Producer, let's go to a break. Play that song, I Send You. This song is Crow Calypso, Mr. Nuri. Mm-hmm. I going in the bush tonight to look for... you know, bullfrog dress up in soldier clothes, going to the river to shoot some crows, just for some tips, some pointers, right? On my way to work this morning, I normally give myself about 40 to 50 minutes to get to work from the eastern side of the island, not deep in the east, you know, not deep at all, but from the eastern side of the island to God. It would take me 15 minutes after the 9:30 time point, because most people, the peak work and school traffic has dissipated. This morning, faced with what seemed an unusually large volume of traffic, I made the decision that I have to be very focused to ensure that I could get to work on time. I approached an intersection, one of the corners coming off of Kemp Road, and the driver felt that I was obligated to leave a gap for them to just flow into traffic without stopping at the stop sign. I did not. I did not accommodate them to get out in front of me either, because I have an obligation to get to my job on time, and since it's on the airwaves, I can't play with that. That's very important. So the driver's first response was to drive their car towards mine, hoping to frighten me into stopping and letting them out. When I didn't, and they came about an inch away from hitting my car, their next response was to cuss at me. Throw jeers and slurs and cusses and ting. And all I could think about is, I cannot leave my producer with dead air when it's time to start the show. In this industry, being on time is paramount. That it was worth it to threaten injury to me, because I am committed to following my obligation to the economy, which is getting to work on time. Little did they know that I was dressed up as the bullfrog, dressed up in soldier clothes, and I was going to the river to shoot some crows. I getting ready to go back to the island. I don't care which island, Auckland, Zandras, Cat Island, Elutra, my other home. I ready to go back to the island. Because something is wrong in New Providence. You guys, stay tuned. We're coming right back. Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.
Boy, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, boy, just a hard day. What?
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Boy, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss give us boy one big chance. Nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he send me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No, boy. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crack Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know who you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You are on the clock with Aaron Green. Ah, boy, my guess, maybe Mr. Mitchell on sprint here. I only got one question for him. To what extent was sports a part of the national identity preceding and immediately after the achievement of majority rule? If we had had more time, I wanted to ask him what were the thoughts of black people and white people, people of European descent, people of African descent, people of mixed heritage, like I have a paternal grandfather from Barbados, I got a maternal grandfather from Turks and Caicos, although I always considered Turks and Caicos a part of the Bahamas. And are we in 2025, taking into account how majority rule was experienced in the past to formulate our local experience? One last headline I want to run through. IDB report. This is from yesterday's Nassau Guardian. You can find this story online at the Guardian website. IDB report, lack of skilled labor could be hindering economic growth. The Inter-American Development Bank, in its just released and latest Caribbean quarterly bulletin, said a lack of skilled labor could be hindering economic growth in the Bahamas. The bank said, quote, although in the Bahamas migration flows are positive, the lack of skilled labor could be hindering growth. Even though firms consider the qualification of employees a pervasive constraint, Bahamian workers are on par with the regional average for skilled workers as a proportion of the total workforce, with around a half of workers from all types of innovative firms being considered skilled. Quote, expanding into what Bahamian firms believe to be the causes affecting workers' skills, the most frequently mentioned is poor quality education and training by local institutions, which particularly affects potentially innovative firms, that's about 82% of the firms, followed by shortages of local professionals, roughly 66%, and lack of training in soft skills institutions, 60.7% for potentially innovative and 68.4% for innovative firms. Now, when they say, hey, Ms. Newry.
No, I appreciate you reading that for me, because I saw the headline and yeah. I did not get to read it.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think I mentioned this on your show before. This has been several narratives saying that we lack skills. Bohemians across the board lack professional skills. And I was trying to understand if they identify what it is that we're lacking. And how is these lack of skills stopping development and growth in the Bahamas? Because that's what they're suggesting, that we are so limited in our skills that growth and development is not happening.
Right. And I think there's a more nuanced assessment here when we talk, when they say that, and lack of training and soft skills by local institutions. Right now, I still ain't quite clear on the parentheses, the 60.7% for potentially innovative and 68.4% for innovative firms. But sometimes people are skilled. They went to the courses, they did the certification, they got a great grade on whatever the project was, but it's the lack of soft skills that render them unable to perform professionally on the job, render them unable to provide those skills in the way needed, thus rendering them useless.
So let's get a definition of soft skills, which is general, and which is completely different from innovation. Right, I see they mention innovation, that not enough innovation is happening. I think that's what you said.
Well,
in the Bahamas, so that's why I inferred from it.
Right, no, it's not that there's not enough in talking about types of like firms or businesses. So I imagine that innovative is new things, right?
Business concept ideas, which is different from soft skills, right? But see, this is my thing. If you go in Angleston now. There's a proliferation of it being opened.
Right.
I mean, every time you drive through in Angleston, there are stores on or outside and all. But there's a particular demographic of people who are opening stores. Right. One is the Chinese at a restaurant they rum selling, and two is the Haitian immigrants who have proliferated all through Angleston. They have. Adopted the Bohemian dream, the Bohemian innovation, the Bohemian business idea. And if this survey, IDB, is concluding that there's not enough innovation happening, that new development, new stores, new concept is happening, it is happening in particular demographics and not necessarily with Bohemians. Is that what they're saying? Or can we construe and analyze that? Well, because business is opening.
Well, I think that perhaps what they're saying is that there are two types of businesses, is the traditional and then there's the innovative. And in both sectors, they're not getting the skills needed for their businesses. I think that's what it's saying. An innovative product, look what happened to him and multiply that by 10,000. That's what's hindering innovation. And I argue that Toby Smith did not have an innovative project.
I would echo you. It's a good project, but it ain't no innovative project.
Right. An innovative project would be a Junkanoo experience, right, where people get to watch, learn, paste, rush, and then at the end of the trip, they get a video where there's a video of them doing what they're doing leading up to their little piece they made, and then there's a small segment with a watermark, with a watermark, with a watermark, where you AI them into a bigger parade, and you call it the AI, right, and you watermark it. So people know it's an AI project. And people go home with a video of them having a Junkanoo experience and then overlay that onto the broader Junkanoo experience for a bit of theater. That's innovation.
Exotic niche market.
Yeah. Yeah. That's innovation, right? You create, you design an app where people could upload all the pictures that they took in the Bahamas of their vacation, and they could select Bahamian music to pair it with and create a video, but it's like it's watermarked. Anybody who sees it knows that it was created in the Bahamas by a Bahamian tourism product.
Do we have any app builders? What have they developed?
I don't know.
I can't say it's plenty if I don't know.
Apparently, I'm unaware. Apparently, I'm unaware.
We are unaware, because I would say, man, you had this app. This is my use, like something that Bahamians are using instead of going to American touchpad type thing, Facebook, Twitter, and we're using that to make business. Yeah. You know, something bohemian. Okay, let me get, so sorry, I interjected. You remember back in the days?
Yeah.
When the internet was crazy in 92, 93, 97.
Yeah.
We all were in Bahamas issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that was innovative for us because it's a bohemian themed, bohemian atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was replaced. It was replaced by American themed.
Right.
As, where's the innovation gone for that? Because there's no bohemian
right.
response
and, but,
to that.
And even that, is it innovative really? Or are we just duplicating and remodeling something that somebody already created? The innovation is in styling it for us. But let's go to the phone line. Good morning, caller. I hope I didn't take too long.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
Morning.
On the IDB thing and the soft skills thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like, you know, it's an excellent thing for me, you know, but, you know, I, you know, after, you know, I started to understand, you know, I sent my kids off to college, right?
Mm-hmm.
Got brainwashed. You know, what they learned, you know, I guess in America, you know, in terms of that being applied in our country,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was not, you know, a part of our program as such, you know, and they had to get like, you know, it's like different jobs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think, you know, we need to approach to our development, you know, where, you know, our kids can actually come back home or be trained here, and they get on the ground as soon as they reach here, and what they have learned can be used on the ground in their own country. Now, you know, half of them stay away because, you know, ain't nothing there for them in terms of what they've been trained for.
Yes.
And, you know, they have been actually trained to survive in another culture. You know, we need some stuff that has our island thing in place. You know, we are a developing
archipelagic state. Pretty much.
All right.
I think one of our biggest problems is that we cannot convince the merchant class and the political class that they actually have to move at the pace of development. Like, they want to derive world-class profits, right, from Bahamians, but refuse the entities, the monoliths themselves, merchant class and political class, refuse to move at the pace of global development, at the pace of our own economy. And they continue to strangle it by refusing to acknowledge the space that they occupy and the impact they actually have on people's lives. Boy, producer, I was supposed to tell you play Shepherd Moon by Ronnie Butler again, because what does the song say? By tomorrow morning, I'll be gone. I going in the bush. I going to go look for the bullfrog, dress up in soldier clothes, go into the river to shoot some crows so I could figure out how to win this $5,000 at the folk tale costume competition at the Division of Cultural Affairs' Culture Day on the Key at Arawaki from 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. Producer, let's take that last caller. You got 30 seconds, caller, I promise you. 30 seconds. How you doing?
Listen, Aaron, man,
yes,
take the idea to the TDC, man. They taking money from the tourists so you could bring all your ideas together, man. Don't sit, put together a business plan and take the idea to the...
So they could put it in the Tourism Development Fund, separate from the Consolidated Fund? I only put in my ideas in a fund that'll benefit me.
No, I mean, you go get the money. They can give you the money for it, Aaron.
I got you.
Waiting for you. Go get it, girl.
No, but you know that idea, that's for the Junker News to pick up. I throw that out there
collaborate with them. You'll put together a business plan, take it to the TDC, and I know you got 30 seconds.
Listen,
Aaron, ask the government, where is the National Heroes?
What us up, May?
Hey.
Yeah. Thank you very much, caller. I bet you they put the plan in the time capsule as well. You've been on the clock with Aaron Green. I'm so sorry we are out of time. The NFL regular season has wrapped up. And the Dolphins beat the 49ers. We win the Super Bowl. I celebrating all weekend. Mr. Eric Sawyer III, I know you were working hard and couldn't join us this morning. I appreciate that, so I minimize the chafing. You guys have a great day. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri is up next. Remember, y'all go try win $5,000 or $2,500 with your children. With your children. Y'all go have a good time. Culture at the Key.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.